All right, now how many of you were fooled into thinking we were actually conducting electrophoresis today? We're not actually doing electrophoresis, and I'm glad you weren't fooled by that. You were given the description of that. We'll actually do that next time. The reason it applies today, though, is because the little pictures of blots I'm going to give you would require, in order to make the things that those are representing, you would have to conduct electrophoresis first. Electrophoresis is a way of separating fragments based on their charge and size and shape. You know, you separate them into a gel, and that makes a gel that has fragments at different positions. And then you apply the voltage in a different direction so that those groups of fragments come out of the surface of the gel and get put onto the surface of a film, which is what the blot is. And then the pieces of paper that you're going to be analyzing are just pictures of what the blot will look like if you were to do that. And that's not the part I want to talk about really too much today. I can come around and show you how to use those blots as you do that part of the exercise. But it takes a lot longer to describe the other important part today, which is meiosis. And that's because this is not a course for science majors. So some of you might not know any of this information at all. And some of you might have had meiosis several times. If it's a breeze for you, fine. But I actually find that people who've learned meiosis several times still are confused by it. So I want to describe that mostly for the speech today. And then the procedure is fairly easy. It's just a matter of understanding it. But the procedure, playing around with your beads, is actually important to do, because I find that most people don't truly understand it, even when they tell me they do, until they can demonstrate it with toys. So let's talk about meiosis, but more generally, let's talk about cell division. Meiosis is just one kind of cell division that eukaryotic organisms undergo. We are eukaryotic organisms. Eukaryotes are they are organisms that have cells with true nuclei, right? And eukaryotic cells undergo two major types of cell division. What are those? Right, mitosis and meiosis. Meiosis is the topic at hand today, but to understand it, you really have to understand it in comparison to mitosis. So I'm going to describe at least roughly both of them. Mitosis is cell division, well, actually, specifically speaking, mitosis is division of a nucleus and its contents. But when that happens, usually the cell itself also splits. That process is called cytokinesis. But when you split the nucleus and the cell itself, you produce two cells from what was one. Now, this is not like a mother giving birth to a baby, because nowadays, usually the mother survives that process. She still exists, and a new person exists. But when a cell reproduces, the original cell no longer exists. Now, instead, two cells exist in its place. Right? Well, if mitosis is the process that produces those two cells, then genetically speaking, the two daughter cells, as they're called, are exactly like the original cell that no longer exists, meaning that it contains the same number and types of chromosomes. It's a genetic duplicate. Each one of them is a genetic nucleus. So they're identical to each other, and they're both identical to the one that gave rise to both of them. And mitosis, therefore, is a way to add cells. Now, we are multicellular organisms. Some organisms aren't, but we are multicellular. We started out, though, as a single cell, right? What do we call that single cell we all started from? The zygote, right? We all started out as one cell called a zygote, and we've turned into, as adults, an organism that contains roughly 10 trillion cells. Well, each of those 10 trillion cells really has the same DNA in it. And so mitosis is a way for organisms to enlarge by adding cells, but it's also a way to replace cells that die. You lose billions of cells every day. Red blood cells die. You lose billions of skin cells because they just wear off. And those need to be replaced if you're going to stay the same size. That's what mitosis is for. Replace cells that die naturally, replace cells that get injured, and also to grow in the first place. Meiosis, though, is for a different purpose. What is the purpose of meiosis? It's involved in reproduction, but reproduction is a lot of processes, actually. Strictly speaking, no. The sex cells don't divide. The sex cells fuse, just the opposite of dividing. But meiosis is the process that produces those sex cells. Okay? So let me talk for a second about ploidy. What does this word ploidy refer to? It's a noun. Ploidy refers to the number, to how many of each type of chromosome a cell has. Okay, that is a different thing from the number of kinds of chromosomes a cell has. But before we can even talk about the difference, let's just say what a chromosome is. A chromosome is a single, very large DNA molecule, literally millions of nucleotides long in most cases, but it's all one sequence. And within that sequence are subsequences that are important for determining how to build proteins, and those are what we call genes. So a given chromosome contains so many genes. But one chromosome is one huge DNA molecule. In eukaryotic cells like our own, there are some number of distinct chromosomes, and that number depends on the species. But they're different chromosomes because they're carrying different genes, which are codes for how to make different kinds of proteins, right? So they're not just duplicates of each other, they're different actual chromosomes. Well, that's not what ploidy refers to, how many different kinds of chromosomes there are. Instead, that number, which I said depends on species, is just given a symbol, which is N. What is N for humans? No. It's not 46 either. No. It is a definite number. It's 23. Right. That means that humans have 23 different kinds of chromosomes, meaning that each of those different kinds of chromosomes is a set of instructions for totally different sets of proteins, and therefore they control totally different traits. By the way, we usually say that DNA gives you your traits. That's really only true indirectly. DNA tells your cells how to build the proteins that you're able to build, but it's those proteins that actually directly give you your traits. Because you look the way you are, you smell the way you do, everything about you is because of your collection of proteins, which depends on the blueprints you have for building those proteins, which is what your DNA is. Okay, so anyway, there's 23 different chromosomes in humans. That's N for humans. N is 23 for humans. It's a different number for other species. Some species have a lot higher N, some species have a lot lower N than humans. All right? Now, ploidy refers to how many of each kind you have. N is also known as the haploid number. Haploid itself means having one of each kind of chromosome. So for humans, a haploid cell is going to contain 23 chromosomes because there's only one of each of those. All right? So N, that's why N is always known as the haploid number. But there are cells that also have two of each kind of chromosome. And those ones are called diploid cells. Di meaning two, right? So to use a symbol to represent the diploid number, that would be 2N. Whatever N is. Okay? You see the difference between ploidy and N? N is how many different kinds of chromosomes there are, regardless of how many of each. And ploidy is the number of each, how many of each there are. Everyone good on those definitions? All right. Yo, go ahead.
Just one more time. Like it's.
Yeah, N is the number of different kinds.
Okay.
And when we represent these with beads, the different kinds of chromosomes are going to be represented by different sizes, different number of beads on them, so they're different size chromosomes. The ploidy refers to how many of each of those kinds there are. So if we do this when we study the entire genome, which is the collection of all the chromosomes in an organism, we number the different kinds. So for humans, it's 1 through 23. Actually, strictly speaking, it's 1 through 22, and then that 23rd pair is either X's or Y's. Or an X and a Y, because that's the sex chromosome. Anyway, there's 23 pairs of them. The number that we give to the chromosomes just tells you that it's a different kind of chromosome. The ploidy, though, has nothing to do with that. The ploidy asks, how many number ones do you have, how many number twos, and so on. And so it's, you know, however many there number ones there are, it's going to be that same number of number twos, number threes. So you either have one of each, two of each. Those are the two normal things in humans, either one of each or two of each. So cells are either haploid or diploid in humans. Okay, now, a little bit ago I said that the main purpose of meiosis is to produce sex cells. What's the single word we use to refer to sex cells? Gametes, correct. Gametes are sex cells. And so sperm are male gametes. Ova or eggs are female gametes. Now, we were talking about reproduction earlier, and I said that reproduction is actually several different processes. And meiosis is part of that. But what is probably the most important process within this overall reproductive process, if the goal is to procreate, what has to happen?
Fertilization,
exactly. And so let's think about what fertilization is. What is fertilization? Anyone know? Go ahead. Well, that's one possible way to lead to fertilization, but there doesn't have to be any sex involved. I mean, there doesn't have to be any intercourse involved. And also you can engage in intercourse without actually, and you can avoid intentionally fertilization. So we still haven't said what fertilization actually is, if it happens by whatever method. And also, by the way, plants undergo fertilization. They're sexual organisms, but they don't mate. They still undergo fertilization, though, like all sexual organisms. Go ahead. That's exactly right. Fertilization, let me be even more specific, using humans as the example, and it's true for a lot of other sexual organisms as well, but fertilization is the union or fusion of two unicellular haploid gametes to produce one unicellular diploid zygote. All right, so in fertilization, the two different kinds of gametes for that species, one from the male, one from the female, actually fuse together to make one cell. But now that one cell that we call the zygote contains the DNA from both gametes. All right? And this is, you know, this is the whole basis of sex. The evolutionary advantage of sex is that it combines the DNA from two parents and therefore shuffles the deck genetically and allows for the possibility of organisms to maybe be more fit than their parents in the face of a changing environment. Anyway, think about what just happened during that fertilization. You've created a zygote that is now diploid, right? Why is the zygote diploid? Because you combined two of each chromosome, right? The male, if this is humans, the male sperm is carrying one of each of the 23 types of chromosomes. Well, so is the egg. So now the zygote has two number ones, two number twos, all the way through two 23s. That's what makes it diploid. Does that make sense? And that's why a zygote and the adult that it might grow up to be now contains genes from both parents because of fertilization. All right. So fertilization, since it's a union of cells and their chromosomes, will always double the ploidy. All right? Well, if that were the only mechanism that we had each generation, then every generation would double the ploidy. You would have a diploid zygote the first generation, and then if there was a mating event in the next generation to produce a third generation, that third generation would be tetraploid. You double it again to have four of each, right? And then there would be eight of each. Well, it's amazing enough that as much DNA as we have can fit not only in an invisible cell, but in a tiny nucleus within that cell. If we keep doubling it every generation, we're quickly going to have an impossible situation. There's no way that you can continue to double the amount of DNA every generation. So we would be extinct within a few generations. We'd be inviable. And that's why fertilization is not the only process that sexual organisms undergo each generation. There has to be another mechanism to cut the ploidy back in half so that when you double it again, you're just back to where you started were, rather than building it up over and over. And what is that other mechanism? Meiosis, exactly. So sexual species undergo a generation-to-generation alternation between fertilization and meiosis. Fertilization will get you to diploidy. Meiosis will get you back to haploidy, so that when you combine the two haploids again in the next round with fertilization, you're just back to diploid. All right? Everyone understand that? Okay. Now let's talk about the particulars then of meiosis. Let me give you a little picture for this. Whether we're talking about mitosis or meiosis, when a cell, actually, let me say one more thing before I get even to this point. Your body, those 10 trillion cells that I talked about, is a collection of cells that you can categorize into two major categories. There's two types of cells, basically, based on what types of cell division they're capable of. And those two types of cells are somatic cells and germline cells. By far, the vast majority of your cells are somatic cells. Somatic means of the body. And so they make up your actual body. Now, somatic cells are diploid cells. So each one of your somatic cells has two of each of the 23 kinds of chromosomes. One of those came from your father, one of those came from your mother. All right? Germline cells are also diploid cells. But the reason they're in their own category is because of what kind of cell division they undergo. Somatic cells undergo just mitosis. And so this is how you got to be that big. Your zygote underwent mitosis to produce two cells, then each of those underwent mitosis. You had four cells, then eight, and so on. And when you repair, you know, when you're healing, you destroy millions of cells with a cut to your skin or something like that, you replace those with mitosis. Your germline cells are a tiny minority of your cells, and they reside where? Well, there are different kinds of reproductive organs. For instance, the penis is a reproductive organ, but it's not where we find germline cells. What kind of reproductive organs? Those are specific. What's the unisex term for those? Testes and ovaries are both examples of what? Gonads. Gonads are where you find your germline cells. All right? Now, I said that they are also diploid, just like your somatic cells. But what makes them different in this categorization is that germline cells undergo both mitosis and meiosis. All right? Now, meiosis is going to start with a diploid cell, and it's going to undergo two rounds of division, and therefore it's going to end up making four cells, each of which are haploid. And those cells are what we call the gametes. This is happening in the gonad that is an ovary, then those gametes will be eggs. If it's happening in the gonads that we call testes, those gametes are going to be sperm. All right? But remember, when a cell divides, the original one no longer exists. And so if you have this tiny, tiny population of cells that we're calling germline cells, and if they only underwent meiosis, you would quickly run out of them, right? Because each one that enters meiosis is no longer part of the population of germline cells. See what I'm saying? This is why germline cells undergo both mitosis and meiosis. First, they undergo mitosis. Just imagine yourself being a germline cell, one of a very small population. If you first undergo mitosis, now there are two of you. The original one no longer exists. But there's two identical cells. One of those will go on into meiosis then and produce four gametes. And it's no longer part of the population. The other one will hang around and still be part of the population because that way you don't deplete the population one at a time. See what I'm saying? Mitosis allows you to maintain that small population of germline cells and use the other of the two cells to go on to meiosis. Okay. Now let's talk about the actual particulars of the process. whether it's mitosis or meiosis that a cell is entering, it prepares for the process by first replicating its genome. It has to make an exact copy of all the DNA that's in the cell. And that should make sense because mitosis and meiosis both are cell division events. If you divide a cell into two, you need to have enough DNA for both of those cells. So you have to first double the amount of DNA you have so that it is enough for two cells. All right? Well, let's just look at mitosis here first because it's easier to understand. In mitosis, there are substages within the process that occur. Prophase first, then prometaphase, which is kind of an in-between phase, and then metaphase, and then anaphase, and then finally telophase. And important things happen in each of these. We can actually, for this class, forget about prometaphase, and just talk about prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase, which are what the four parts of the mitosis cartoon are illustrating. Well, first of all, in this cartoon cell, upper right here, what is N for this cell? Which is the same question as, how many different kinds of chromosomes are there? There are two, right? There are two because one of them is big and one of them is small. Okay? Now, so N here is two for whatever species this is representing. This is the simplest case. Notice that each individual chromosome, though, it has kind of an X-shaped appearance to it. That's because these are replicated chromosomes, meaning they've already gone through the replication process, so each individual chromosome, each X-shape, is actually enough DNA to be two individual chromosomes, except we call it one replicated chromosome because those two copies are still stuck together. Each individual copy is called a chromatid rather than a chromosome. And the place where they are still connected is called a centromere. All right? In the cartoon, the centromere is just the place where the X crosses. Right there, right there, right there, and right there. Since those two chromatids are exact duplicates of each other within one chromosome, we call them sister chromatids. But since they're still connected, we don't count them as individual chromosomes. We count the one pair of them as a replicated chromosome. So this cell has four overall chromosomes, right? We said that N is two because there's a big version and a small version. What's the ploidy? No, four is the total number of chromosomes. Two is not a proper answer for ploidy. What's the word? Diploid, exactly. This is a diploid cell because there are two of each kind of chromosome. There's two big ones and there's two small ones. Okay? Now that's what the color represents. The size represents the different kinds. The color represents where they came from as far as parents are concerned. So red could be the maternal version, and blue could be the paternal version. Okay? But there's two number ones, the big ones, and there's two number twos, the small ones. That's what makes it a diploid cell. All right. Well, in prophase, what happens is that these chromosomes condense. They get very small. Actually, before we get to this part of the cell cycle, you don't really see individual chromosomes because they're so expanded. But in order for it not to be just a tangled mess, during mitosis, the DNA coils up into these very small structures we call chromosomes, and that you can see actually in a light microscope. That's what we're looking at in the cartoon version. All right? That's the hallmark of prophase, this condensing of the chromosomes. What makes metaphase metaphase, which is the next step, is that something lines up halfway between the two ends of the cell, or the two poles. You can see there's a lining up in mitosis. What lines up are those replicated chromosomes. Anaphase is named for the fact that whatever lines up at metaphase gets split apart. Okay? And then telophase refers to, which is the final phase, that refers to those things that have been split during anaphase reaching the end of the road. Each half of what is split travels to one pole or the other, depending on which side of the cell you're in. So telophase refers to the polarization of whatever is divided. And then when the cell itself splits, which is cytokinesis, now all of a sudden you have one half of the DNA that was in the original cell in each of those two cells. Everyone still good at this point? Okay. Now, the same steps occur in meiosis. Prophase, metaphase, anaphase, telophase, in that order. But meiosis has some important differences. One important difference is that meiosis has two rounds of cell division instead of just one, like in mitosis. So mitosis is going to take a cell, turn it into two cells at the end. Meiosis is going to start with a cell. It's going to produce two cells in the first round, but then each of those is going to undergo a cell division round. So by the total end, you're going to have four cells. Okay? That's one important difference. Another important difference I hinted at but didn't say explicitly. That is that mitosis always maintains the ploidy. If you're going to make a genetically identical copy, that means the ploidy has to be the same as well, right? So you start with a cell, you make two cells that have exactly the same number of each type of chromosome in them. Meiosis, on the other hand, reduces the ploidy. And that's the whole idea of it. Like I said, you have to have a ploidy reduction step to undo the ploidy doubling step that fertilization is. All right? Now, those two differences are important, but we need to figure out, this is the most confusing part of it, and this is the part that even biology majors remain confused about for sometimes years. It's understanding when the ploidy gets reduced in meiosis. So the two overall parts of meiosis are indicated with Roman numerals. There's meiosis 1 and meiosis 2. Each one is a round of cell division. But importantly, meiosis 1, not 2, but 1, is the part where the ploidy gets reduced. So that means those two temporary cells that meiosis 1 produces, those are already haploid. Each of them then enters meiosis 2, and the ploidy doesn't get changed anymore. So they're going to, the four that finally result are still going to be haploid. All right? Now the key to understanding that is to really pay close attention to what the difference is between metaphase of mitosis and metaphase 1, which is metaphase of meiosis 1. Now, they're both metaphase, and therefore something is lining up halfway between the poles in each of those two processes. mitosis and meiosis. But the crucial difference is what it is that is actually lining up in mitosis metaphase versus meiosis metaphase. They are different things. Okay? Well, let's look back at mitosis on the right. During metaphase, what is lining up during metaphase of mitosis is individual replicated chromosomes. All right? Now, we said there's how many replicated chromosomes in this fictional cell? How many total chromosomes are there? There are four. Therefore, four individual things line up during metaphase of mitosis. And you see all four of them, right? Now, there's two kinds of chromosomes. So there's two number ones and two number twos. But in mitosis, the two number ones don't care what each other are doing. Each number one is acting alone and lining up halfway between. So there's four individual things lining up. In humans, how many things would be lining up in metaphase of mitosis? How many? No. 46. Because the two number ones are not together, right? The two number twos are not together. So you have 46 individual replicated chromosomes in humans lining up in metaphase of mitosis. All right, that's important to understand. Now, since these are replicated chromosomes, each one of them is made up of two sister chromatids held together at a centromere. But that's all metaphase is, that lining up process. Anaphase, the very next stage, is when the split occurs. If this is mitosis we're talking about, what is it that splits apart? The two sister chromatids, exactly, for each replicated chromosome. And here it gets kind of tricky with nomenclature, because as soon as the two sister chromatids separate from each other, we no longer call them sister chromatids. We don't even call them chromatids anymore, because now that they're disconnected, each one is considered to be a chromosome in its own right. The difference is that when the chromosome is split, when the chromatids split apart, each of those two chromosomes are now unreplicated chromosomes. It's just enough DNA for one cell. Okay? And so when you finally get to when each of those chromosomes gets to its pole and the cell itself splits via cytokinesis, now you have two cells, each of which contains four chromosomes that are unreplicated. Now in other words, the process is complete. You have two cells that are genetically identical to the first one. You see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's compare that to meiosis one. And here is the most important thing to understand. Assuming that you're good with what happened in metaphase of mitosis, it's important to understand, appreciate the difference here. What lines up at metaphase one, which is metaphase of meiosis one, is not individual replicated chromosomes. Instead, it's pairs of replicated chromosomes. Okay? So the two number ones actually find each other and come together. Now, this actually happens in prophase one. In prophase one, you not only have this condensing occurring so that the chromosomes get small, but the two of each kind of chromosome, the two number ones, the two number twos, and so on, will find each other and come together. That's a process called synapsis. And since each replicated chromosome is already two chromatids big, when the two number ones, one from the father and one from the mother, get together in synapsis, you now really have a total of four chromatids, which is why we call this pair of chromosomes a tetrad, meaning a four-part thing. That's one thing you can call it. You can also call it a homologous pair. The two number ones are homologous because they're the same type of chromosome. They're just from different parents. The two number twos are also homologous, but a number one is not homologous to a number two. Different kinds of chromosomes, okay? Well, in mitosis, you don't have synapses. The two number ones don't care what each other are doing. But you do have it in prophase of meiosis one. And therefore, what lines up during metaphase one is not individual replicated chromosomes, it's tetrads, or pairs of homologous chromosomes. And therefore, instead of having two N things line up like you do in mitosis, 46 for humans, you have N things line up, right? You have the pair of number ones, the pair of number twos, and so on. In this case, since N is two, you only have two things lining up. See that? The homologous pair of big chromosomes, the homologous pair of small chromosomes. Compare that to mitosis. You had four or two N things lining up. A number one, another number one, a number two, another number two. Now, since that is the crucial difference, that also means that when we split apart in the next stage, it's different things that are going to be splitting in meiosis, meiosis one compared to mitosis. Just keep in mind for a second that what split apart in anaphase of mitosis were the two sister chromatids, right? That's not what's going to split apart here. In anaphase one of meiosis, what splits apart are the two homologous chromosomes. The tetrad splits so that you have a number one going one way and the other number one going the other way. All right? One of those number ones is the paternal version coming from the father. That's going to go to one side. The maternal version of that same chromosome is going to go to the other side. That's represented by color here. So the red big one's going to go one way, the blue big one's going to go the other way. But notice that each of them is still replicated because we haven't split the chromatids apart. All we did was split the two homologs apart. So they're still replicated. See that in the cartoon? Even after splitting during anaphase, each one is still an X shape. It's still a replicated chromosome. The different coloring you talking about? Right here, you mean? That is because of what we call crossing over, which occurs as part of synapsis. Now, when synapsis occurs, not only does the paternal version find the maternal version of that same kind of chromosome, and they come together, but they also can cross over. So the blue and the red leg, which are non-sister chromatids because they came from different parents, will actually physically cross over, and this part will be traded for this part. They swap pieces of their DNA. This is why we aren't... This is a major reason why we are different from our parents. So that produces a set of DNA that's never existed before because it shuffles the deck and creates a chromosome that's a mixture, a single chromosome, that's a mixture of both parents already. And so this red thing used to be part of this chromosome, this blue thing used to be part of this chromosome. That's crossing over. All right, but you see what's happening with the splitting? What is split apart are not sister chromatids, it's homologs or homologous chromosomes. That is the really important part to understand, because now, you know, these are going to continue to migrate apart and eventually it's going to turn into two cells. But those two cells that are just in the middle of meiosis, because you have another round of division to go, those two cells, and understand this, are already haploid. Why are they already haploid? Well, by the definition of haploid, because they each have only one of each chromosome type. Right? One of those cells has just one big one and one small one. The other one has just one big one and one small one. Notice, though, that one of those cells has the father's version of the big one. The other one has the mother's version of the big one. And similarly for the other two, for the other chromosome. So in humans, it would be 23 pairs of homologous chromosomes line up. And then each of these two interim cells will be haploid already, contain just one of each of the 23 types, and they'll be different from each other already. Because one will get some of the fathers, some of the mothers, the other one, but only one of each. And the other one will get the other parent's one for each of those chromosomes. Okay, well, since we've reduced the ploidy, it might seem like we could be done, because that's the whole idea of meiosis, is to reduce the ploidy. That's already been done. But the reason we have to have another round of division is because we still have replicated chromosomes. They still have twice the amount of DNA in them that they need. So we need another round, meiosis two, that does the same thing mitosis does. And in fact, meiosis II is exactly like mitosis. So, you have to go through the lining up stage again. You have another metaphase, but this one's metaphase II. And what lines up in metaphase II of meiosis is exactly the same thing that lines up in mitosis. Individual, not paired, replicated chromosomes. And therefore, what splits apart in anaphase II is the same thing that splits apart in anaphase of mitosis, sister chromatids. So that by the time you're done, and this is happening in both of these two cells, you now have four cells, each of which is still haploid, because mitosis and meiosis II do not change the ploidy. But we've gotten rid of that extra copy by putting it into its own cell, and therefore you have four haploid gametes. They're all different from each other. And of course, they're different from the original cell because they're haploid compared to diploid. So meiosis overall starts with a diploid cell, produces four haploid gametes that are genetically distinct from each other. Mitosis in humans starts with a diploid cell, produces two diploid cells that are genetically identical to each other and to the original cell. That's it in a nutshell. So now I'm sure that especially the people who've never had this before are not completely sure of everything I've just said. And that's the whole idea behind playing with your beads. So talk this out. Play around with your beads, and I'll come around and answer your questions. But let me just say a couple things about the beads. First of all, the beads themselves you can think of as genes. And you can make different kinds of chromosomes simply by using different numbers of beads. So you can make a big chromosome and a small chromosome, right? Greater number of beads and smaller number of beads. The colors of the beads are not to indicate types of chromosomes, the sizes. The colors indicate where they came from. So you use one color for the father's version and one color for the mother's version that are in that individual. Okay? The magnets, which are the white parts that you hook the beads to, what do these things represent? Actually, they might be different in yours. What do these magnetic things that you hook the beads onto represent? Centromeres, exactly. And so, when you have a replicated chromosome, both of those chromatids better be the same color. Right? You don't want to hook a red one with a yellow one. That wouldn't be a replicated chromosome. That would be two chromosomes hooked together. That doesn't happen that way. All right? So if you, when you, when it comes time to representing crossing over, you'll have a replicated yellow one, for instance, or whatever color you use, and another, which is two strands of yellow, identical, and another one of the same size but a different color, two replicated red ones, for instance, held together by their own centromere. And then crossing over means that you would take some beads off of one leg and replace them with beads from the other one, and now you have totally new chromosomes. All right, go ahead and get started.